Swift podcasts give you, the listener, the opportunity to hear the inside story and be part of the conversation about all means all with leaders in the field of inclusive education and school-wide transformation. Here we are at Swift Education Center at the University of Kansas recording a podcast on the topic of equity-based MTSS. Our guest today is Dr. Wayne Saylor. Dr. Saylor is the director of the Swift Center and a professor at the University of Kansas. So we first interviewed you for Swift Unscripted over a year ago, and you talked to us about the need to reframe the problem, and you challenged traditional perceptions of disability and inclusion. Can we just start with you reminding our listeners a little bit about how you define inclusion?
Sure. Back in the 70s, I had a friend who was very well known for his work with young adults that had needs for support, what they called in those days severely handicapped adults. And his name was Mark Gold. And Mark Gold, his mantra, if you will, was, if at first you don't succeed, try another way. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, has stood as a marker for the whole field of special education. I've become increasingly aware over the decades in this work that we're not succeeding, that our constituency does not experience very good post-school outcomes. Bill Honig, when he was schools chief for the state of California, said about special education, it looks to me like its purpose is to create more special circumstances in adulthood. John McKnight, in his famous book, The Careless Society, published in 1995, picked up that theme and basically turned it into a market analysis that, you know, as a Western capitalist democracy, primary concern is as a service economy is to generate a need for service, so that we can maintain a full employment economy by training and providing people to provide services as an alternative to manufacturing things, which we used to do back before 1950. So anyway, the question then becomes, how can we really try another way to do something meaningful for people who need extra supports and services in order to have a meaningful life, a good quality of life? And that led to the application to become the Swift Center, which, as everybody knows that is listening to this, I imagine, was a 5-year, well-funded technical assistance center to address to the question, how can we better integrate students in elementary and middle schools who need extra supports and services? You'll notice that I'm avoiding using that term disability because I think it's part of the problem. It's right. It's the old think. It's a medical model concept. The basic idea is that we should use the methods of medicine to diagnose and prescribe, categorize, and essentially isolate for service provision. It's great for creating markets for test makers and service providers and so on. But again, to come back, does it work? And the outcomes are not good. So the Swift Center came up with what we think is another way. And it's not grounded in the medical model. It's not grounded in a concept of disability. It's grounded in what we describe as a concept of equity. We borrowed heavily from Elizabeth Kozlowski and Alfredo Artiles in their work on essentially looking across what they describe as all marginalized groups. Mm-hmm. So people with so-called disabilities would be an example of one marginalized group, but there's others.
Right.
People who have free and reduced meals, the farm group, as they call it. And what are their specialized needs? And there's new arrivals from countries with different languages than English, and second language learners, and what do we do about them? And people with health care issues, and so on and so forth. Arteles and Kozlowski argue that what needs to be included are equitably distributed needed resources for people. So when we talk about inclusion in the Swift Center, we said that what really needs to be included is the a match of needed resources and supports that are based on measured needs of students. And we argued that MTSS is the driver for all of this. In my opinion, MTSS, which originally, of course, grew out of RTI, Response to Intervention, which in turn, by the way, grew out of the field of public health, and was imported into special education, and from special education into all of education when it leaped from RTI to MTSS. It's the innovation there is that it puts a real focus on database decision making and careful measurement of student progress in the curriculum, and it makes no particular distinction across students. So it applies to special education, it applies to ELL, it applies to Title I, it applies to gifted and talented, it applies to general ed, et cetera, et cetera. That helps us stop categorical thinking and instead essentially raises expectations. You know, the goal of MTSS is to have everybody participating as much as possible in the general curriculum in Tier 1, the general education classroom, grade level or content. And removal from that classroom would only be in accordance with a specialized intervention supplied at Tier 2, and with the measurement of progress geared toward reentry to Tier 1, and the same thing for the third tier, which is the most intensive level of intervention. So we, with the Swift Center, embraced MTSS as the main driver, and looked across other evidence-based practices lend their support. We proceeded on the basis of a logic model in 2012 that had our five domains sort of represented equally theoretically for their impact on student academic and social achievement.
Right.
And what we found is that our logic model needed to be adjusted because what our data are showing, and we're in the process now of publishing the first round of papers on that topic, what our data showed is that student academic and social achievement results from progress installing and implementing MTSS, and that the other domains, administrative leadership and family community engagement and integrated systems and policy and inclusion and practice, those domains essentially are a scaffold that enables MTSS to begin to be installed. So it's the logic model that we would write now, and in fact will develop for the Swift Education Center, which I'll talk about in a minute. That logic model now has MTSS as the core driver of student outcomes, and within the context of the framework of these other practices, that enable schools to successfully install, implement, sustain over time, and for districts to and state agencies to scale up. So it's I think that was we suspected that at the outset, but we had no data on which to base it. And now we have data that clearly shows that it works.
Right.
So so this try another way, the elements that I want to stress are, one, forget about disability. I think that's an invalid construct. We all need something, right? You know, some of us need glasses. People need shoe inserts. On and on.
Right.
So to say that you're in a classified category for specialized supports and services because you have low vision or something like that doesn't really, all it essentially does is remove you from the greater context of the educational agenda. And in our view, that's not productive, and we think it's part of the problem. We hope down the road that with reauthorization of IDEA, if it should surface and come up, that people will take seriously some of this newer thinking and some of the results that show that within education that we get dramatic improvements on and beginning to close the achievement gap between students with support needs and students that are in Tier 1. And what's needed next is really intensive research on linking school interventions with post-school outcomes. We really need to have much better sources of information on the relationship, the statistical relationship between certain levels of implementation and progress within secondary education in particular. High schools, of course, now are the new frontier.
Right.
And what happens then, we need to follow them up for at least 5 years after leaving high school. And then I think we're going to be well on the way to a whole new concept of education, which is coherent,
right,
from preschool all the way up through post secondary. Anyway, so all of that said, I think the idea of the Swift Education Center is to move from the specific task of implementing this framework and seeing how it works within these five states, 64 schools, and take what we've learned from that and now offer this framework of technical assistance, supports, and services to states, districts that have an interest. And as a university-based center, that enables us to continue to support and again, we do everything we do with data use agreements so that we can continuously evaluate our work and its impact and refine, you know, this overall framework approach. And right now it's clear that there's an interest out there. We have numerous school districts that are contracting with us and inviting us to explore contracting. And we have quite a bit of work going on the West Coast, California and Oregon and Washington in particular. And so we think it's very encouraging that that people recognize the need to try something different and value that the outcomes that we've obtained so far. The final thing I want to say about this is this idea of inclusion to me, is another invalid construct. Right. So we can say that the Swift approach doesn't care much for this idea of disability and the whole medical model classification system around it. And it also doesn't care too much for this idea of inclusion. And the reason is that it's a place-based definition. The idea of inclusion is we have people who've been excluded. And given that they've been excluded, which is where we depart, we think it's very important to pay attention to why they've been excluded. But given that they've been excluded, how do we now get them included? And the problem with it is that the federal government's measure for that is a classroom-based definition. Mm-hmm. 80%, you know, of participation in the regular classroom, 40% of time spent in the regular classroom, and segregated placement. One of the things that we learned out of implementation of MTSS is that the classroom is one environment in the school, and in fact the school is one environment in the broader context of its community, and education can take place in a variety of environments. It doesn't just have to be in the general education classroom, or in some cases even in the school. It can take place at the local bank, it can take place at the dry cleaners, public transportation, and so on and so forth for measured student needs. And what I would recommend under IDEA's reauthorization that we take a look at a different set of metrics for evaluating what we do given this new information. And that metric would be, in my view, it ought to be, one metric would be decreasing the amount of time in segregated education. Mm-hmm. So if our real goal is this a place-based idea of inclusion, then we really need to measure the success with which we're eliminating exclusion. Right now, we don't do that. We're looking at these percentages of time in the general ed classroom. We know from lots of research now, Jennifer Kurth, Mary Morningstar, and Diane Rindack, and many others have published important data showing that segregated education is not a good idea, and also Michael Giangreco has shown that reliance on paraprofessionals for education to maintain more time in the general ed classroom when it's inappropriate is not a good idea. We don't get good results. And in fact, there's even some data suggesting it can be harmful to general education kids' outcomes if it's disruptive and so forth. So the idea of inclusion really needs to be, I think, shifted from the idea of apart from desegregation. It should be looked at in terms of inclusion of resources. And so if you look at co-teaching, general ed, special ed co-teaching, that's a possibility of enabling tier two groups to be run within a general education classroom effectively with the extra support from a special educator. We can also bring other people into the mix. We can, if we have a librarian in the school, that librarian may be a good person to run a tier two group in the library. We don't, because the students who would require that intervention may not be able to progress in the general ed classroom during the reading block. And the same with math, same with science, same with history, same with what have you. The main thing is that we group kids according to their measured need and their ability to benefit through progress monitoring from their intervention. So we can have kids in all kinds of different places within the school. Main thing is we don't segregate them.
Right.
We don't say kids with some label like autism spectrum disorder all need to be in some room where, you know, they may be very, very diverse in their needs. But just because they have that label, they're put in a classroom like that. Same with gifted kids. Do we really need a gifted classroom and send them off on some different, you know, curriculum component? Or can we set up a tier two group within a general ed classroom that's accelerated for those kids that, you know, are making additional progress? So to come back to the Swift Education Center, this is our view of now taking what we've learned and moving this agenda into innovative state schools, districts that that want to try another way.
Right. And I imagine that takes a shift on their part, that those roles really change. I mean, you gave some examples of how that changes the role of the special educator, maybe how that's been done traditionally, how resources are allocated, what resources are even being used, and how paraprofessionals and related service providers are being used. So I imagine that's a big shift at the school level, but also at the state and the district level as how they deliver resources and support.
Which brings me to my third term that I would like to see drop from
right.
the lexicon, and that's that word special.
Right.
You know, it's all kids are special, you know, right? We don't need to create a subgroup of kids who need extra stuff and decide they're special or exceptional or any of these what I think of as euphemistic terms, you know, to justify segregation. I think that what we might want to consider is moving to the term specialized.
Mm-hmm.
So we have specialized educational supports and services rather than departments of special education. You know, or and there's other possibilities, but I think if we're serious about this trying a different way, then I think we need to have a different lexicon to emerge in doing that. Personnel at the school, their roles are certainly undergoing reconceptualization around this idea. So specialized educators. There's a tremendous wealth of resources and new knowledge that's come out of the field of special education. Pockets of research around the country, like Vanderbilt, here at KU, and its history with kids with reading problems and math problems in learning. Those resources really need to get out of their separate system and into the whole school because they can directly benefit other marginalized groups of kids who need similar resources. If they're encapsulated within special education, then they're denied to kids under Title I. If there's innovations in Title I, which there are, those innovations need to be available to kids in special education and so on and so forth. So one of the implications of this trying another way is that I have to say I really like the writings of Michael Fullan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's on to this and has been now for quite some time. And his current buzzword, if you will, is coherence. And what Fullan's been arguing is that we really need to take these different islands and silos of expertise and new knowledge and blend them into a coherent framework, overall structure for education enables all kids to get access to those specialized innovations and interventions and new knowledge and assessments and so on, so that they can progress in the general curriculum. The general curriculum has to be the overarching goal and raison d'etre for this work. We know from history that creating separate curricula, like so-called functional curricula for kids with extensive support needs, gets us nowhere. It basically holds kids back that could be beginning to, you know, even if they have serious issues that impede their learning, they still can make progress to the point where they can benefit increasingly from less segregated opportunities to learn. So collaborative teaching, integrated therapies.
When we were working
in the predecessor to SWIFT, which was called the Schoolwide Applications Model, or SAM, in the Ravenswood City School District in California, which was a very high-need district, we found that extensive supports for all students could be marshaled in such a way that we didn't need any segregated classrooms, that everything could be delivered as long as it was delivered on a school-wide basis, and in the upper grade levels in some community-supported educational work as well. So that if you had kids that were thought of as severe, profound, and all those old kind of ancient history terms, they could do very well within the context of the whole school in a combination of Tier 3 and Tier 2 interventions with appropriate supports. We also found that we didn't need this pull-out, push-in stuff. When under the old pull-out idea is you would have, let's say, kids that needed speech intervention and communication interventions, they would be pulled out of their classroom at times that were convenient for the therapist, not for the kid. He might be pulled out of the curriculum area in the classroom where he was actually making some progress, or she was making progress. And then she would go off to do something that is totally unrelated and separate. What we learned in Ravenswood and through some very innovative therapy, both speech and physical and occupational therapy, was that these could be fully integrated into the curriculum. And in fact, there were some data collected that indicated that that the general ed kids could benefit from some of the applications of articulation and so forth that were delivered through speech therapy, targeted to specific individuals who had that need in their IEP.
Right.
So in other words, integrated speech therapy benefited everybody, including the target student, and there was no segregation. And also no pulling out of an important curriculum component under Tier 1. We found that what California calls adaptive physical education, APE for short, that therapists providing that activity would have kids with IEPs that targeted some of those vestibular stimulation activities and so forth, that lots of the general ed kids enjoyed those same balance beams and all of that. So they could actually have a student fully integrated for that support need, and it was fun for everybody, which helped to socially connect that student, you know, with his peers or her peers in their general ed context. So I think those are just two examples of rethinking integrated specialized supports and services and collaborative teaching. But there are many more. One of the things we like to do with Swift Education Center is help our partner school districts and their schools rethink the use of space and personnel at the school and take that on as a team activity. And so if there are segregated classrooms for categorical supports, have them design a plan to reutilize those spaces along an MTSS agenda and begin the long, arduous. By the way, you don't do this all at once. This
right. takes, you it know, doesn't happen overnight.
It can take, you know, 3-4 years to completely get it off the ground. You need to adjust and modify IEPs. For example, if somebody's IEP says they're going to be in a special class to do these things, then you know, people have to come to an agreement that we're going to begin to move in a different direction and start. So to come back to this push-in, pull-out thing, what we think of as an alternative to that is master scheduling. Mm-hmm. Master scheduling is a very different concept than pull-out. It's master scheduling makes sure that students are, no matter where they are and with whom in the school, it's measured instruction, measurable outcome, progress monitored instruction. So it's not, they're not going to be taken out of something that they're clearly benefiting from in one environment to go to some other environment. They'll be scheduled into a different part of the school for something as needed, when it's clear that they cannot benefit in the first environment, but they have a good possibility of benefiting in the second environment. And so it's a whole school rethink of how we use space at the school. And in our view, if you're on the payroll of a school, you're an educator of some sort.
Right.
So your job title may be custodian, or it may be security guard, or it may be school secretary, or it may be librarian, or it may be physical therapist, or it may be paraprofessional, or.
Right.
The question is, what do you bring to the table that's educationally beneficial to students in some way? And so that begins to lead to some different kinds of job descriptions for people. We've had case examples of schools that had a speech therapist who was also an artist, and the school had lost its art program because of budget cuts, but the speech therapist was perfectly happy to take an art block and bring it in because, you know, she really liked that, and that was something she had real skills to bring to the table. It turns out that in our experience, there's people working for schools are interested in outcomes for the kids and have something to contribute. And so teams at the school begin to think of who can support different tiered intervention strategies within the school at different blocks of time, and those get built into the master schedule. The downside of all of this is that master schedules become very complicated. they need to be computer assisted. There needs to be, if somebody's sick and doesn't show up, there's got to be a way to readjust the master schedule for that day, or everything falls apart. But all of that's new, and it's all developing, and there are people working on the problem, and it's all possible.
We have some tools on our website at swiftschools.org to help with that process for master scheduling. But for our listeners who are interested in learning more about equity-based MTSS and perhaps implementing this in their schools or districts or states, what can the Swift Education Center do to support them in those efforts?
contact us.
Right. Contact us through the website, swiftschools.org, or through email at swift@ku.edu.
Sure. Want to explore a possibility that of continuing support from us to try another way, as I like to think of it now, contact us. And that can be a contact through the website, or give me a call or email me. And
okay.
And same with Amy.
Great.
And Amy McCarts, the co-director. And we're happy to be of help.
Mm-hmm. And if our listeners contact us at swift@ku.edu, we could definitely put them in touch with either you or Amy on the request.
Sure.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time today. This has been really helpful for our listeners, I'm sure, and a great introduction to the Swift Education Center. So we really appreciate your time.
Sure, Allie, and thanks. It's a pleasure.
So if you want to know the full story about equity-based MTSS, you can go to swiftschools.org, where you can find lots more resources and stories in the field of school-wide transformation. Swift Education Center provides support in equity-based MTSS and inclusive education to promote the learning and academic achievement of all students.